Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault. The following presentation takes place at the 2010 Forum for Primary Prevention Advocates called Ending Violence Against Women and Teen Dating Violence. Keynote speaker Brian O'Connor, Director of Communications at the Family Violence Prevention Fund, discusses some best practices for teen dating violence prevention.
So the title of the session is Best Practices for Teen Dating Violence Prevention. When we were discussing this plenary, we got really excited about sharing what we've seen over the past few years directly reaching youth. And in particular, I lead an initiative at the Family Violence Prevention Fund called That's Not Cool, which some of you might be familiar with, and it's funded by the Office on Violence Against Women. It intends to reach specifically 13 to 15-year-olds with broad messages and tools to start a conversation about the subject and inspire them to care about it. I'll touch on that campaign, among a few others, as I mentioned later. So I've seen a lot, but I want to revise the title of today's session to be Some Best Practices for Teen Dating Violence, because that's exactly what it is. And again, I can't underscore enough how this is the brain trust in the room. And so I'll try and leave some time at the end for comments and certainly some questions that we can have a discussion about what we talk about today. I really appreciate being here because it gives me an opportunity to also look up from the day-to-day and ask, what are we seeing? What is moving the needle? What is not, and why? Like most of this work, there aren't discrete approaches that fit for each and every program at each and every time. So what I'll review with you today overlaps and works in certain contexts, so they're by no means exhaustive. And as I'd love to learn too, as I mentioned, I welcome some of your thoughts. So there are three objectives in laying out today's session that I hope you'll walk away with better describing some of the key dynamics of teen relationships today, identifying four public education considerations, as I'm calling them, not necessarily best practices, but considerations when reaching teens, and then also feature social marketing resources that illustrate these considerations in an effort to prevent teen dating violence. As you heard about my background, I focus on public education and social marketing because that's my area of concentration. So that's what we're going to be talking about specifically here. But also, it's really important to note, especially given when you think about online technologies and how they can work together as far as what's happening on the ground to produce content for the actual online platform, say a Facebook or website. It's very important that public education works best when it's complemented by sound organizing on the ground and grassroots community-based components. Just for a second, let's step back, and I know we've been talking a lot about youth and teens, but think about what dating was like when you were a teenager. And, you know, you don't have to close your eyes or anything, but how old were you when you started dating? How did you arrange going out? Where did you go? What did you do? How did you get there? What did you call the other person? Boyfriend, girlfriend, steady? How did you know you were dating? How did you know when you were broken up? And who was the first person to whom you said, I love you, and thought you really meant it, right? The dynamics of teens and dating today, and that was a little excruciating stroll down memory lane probably for some of us, but keep those in mind as we walk through just about four brief macro trends today. We need to remember we're not the target audience, and some things are different than when we were at that age, and also some things are the same. Or even if it's the same, I'll also talk about how a lot of these gray areas are just that, but they've also been around for generations. And so it's how exactly do those gray areas manifest themselves is actually really what's different, so to speak. So let's release some of that baggage, and it'll help us better understand what teens are really experiencing today. It's important to also note, another caveat, right? When we say teen, trends could vary dramatically for a 13 or 14-year-old than a 16 or 17-year-old. And so, for instance, when a young person or his friend start driving, their responsibilities, their access, their entire world really changes. I'm sure many of us can relate to that as well. And what's also important to keep in mind is that given the difference between just 1 or 2 years here, when a 13-year-old is dating a 15 or 16-year-old, that, too, is also still a big deal. It was a big deal when a freshman was dating a junior or something like that. And thinking about the context of our work, a young 14-year-old girl, for example, dating a boy that's 17 or 18 really matters, and certainly something that I'm sure we've all encountered and thought a lot about. So today, teens are dating by network, About half of you say they don't date, they're just hanging out in groups, and it's increasingly popular to go to the prom on a group date, for example. And by network, it also means, and by constant connections, it really means that teens meet each other online, they flirt online. You can meet on Facebook, and you can go check out your friends' friends, people who maybe you've never even met or talked to. They make dates and break up by cell phone. And this is a consideration when we think about the lack of empathy, if you will, and personal connection that we sometimes see with relationships that are primarily digital. I'm going to just show a quick clip that really illustrates this point.
Certain groups will create a message board just, you know, trashing certain people at school.
I really just think it's like the internet isn't really there because we can't see it physically. Like, we can't hold on to it. But it's there.
The sense that you're anonymous, like you write something and, oh, no one's going to know it's me, but that's real life. You're hurting people by saying these things.
You don't want to stoop your level down to the point where you're talking to, like, well, I'm talking like this. This isn't even me. Now I'm changing who I am to stoop my level down to somebody that's doing this to someone else.
There's a thin line between words and wounds.
That's an MTV campaign that was launched at the end of last year, and I'm going to talk a little bit more. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later. So another trend that we're seeing, right, is teen dating is broadcast to their network. Relationship status announcements. Relationships are just much more public. Pictures of last night's party are visible to the world almost instantaneously. We all know that. Social networking profiles are updated to reflect the latest relationship developments, and uploaded photos and information, video and clips are available to all friends. And what this really accelerates the trajectory of young relationships and intensifies them, which is really an interesting dichotomy, right? Because I think a lot of what we've heard is that with having that, when you see that anonymity, that digital wall up in a way we'd think would create less intimacy, which could potentially be true. And I think the jury's still out in some of that, and maybe won't really know that for another kind of decade or so of really the deep impact that it's having, for better or for worse. But it does also accelerate the trajectory, the kind of line or flow of the relationship that, you know, sometimes relationships were really, you were going out on Tuesday and you broke up on Saturday. And so can you just imagine if you're constantly in contact, what that also can do? Maybe you go out on Tuesday and break up on Wednesday or something. I don't know. So dating is defined by hooking up and friends with benefits. Maybe another thing that you've also thought about. It seems that the reality is growing, though, that relationships, although they've been long undefined, it's increasing. It's more accepted with teens to have casual sexual encounters today, and terms like hooking up and friends with benefits are common. 3/4 of teens agree that hooking up is when a girl and guy get together for a physical encounter and don't necessarily expect anything further. That's a quote. And the definition of physical encounter ranged from kissing all the way to having sexual intercourse. Then 3/4 of teens aged 16 to 18 report having had a relationship, dated, or hooked up with someone. So 3/4 of teens are saying they understand what it is, and 3/4 of teens are saying they're doing it. What's particularly interesting, though, and this is something important to highlight, is that most teens are interested in being in a committed sexual relationship, but they think their friends are more interested in being in a casual sexual relationship with no attachments. So 72%, you see there, 72% versus 58%. This perception of a norm and the pressure from peers is a recurring theme in our research and in our focus groups. The peer pressure and insecurity of being a teenager hasn't changed even in the face of all of this technology, and hasn't changed in what would appear to be a more relaxed attitude. So dating is socialized at a younger age. Today, preteens and tweens are acting more like girls or young adults, and we see the changes in their style or fashion, what they wear, video games they play, and the music that they listen to. There's a sense of an overall age compression, if you will. We also know that physical and behavioral changes with puberty are also becoming more common among teens age 9 to 11. Dating behavior or the pressure to start dating may start earlier than we might expect, which means we need to talk to teens about healthy relationships earlier as well. And that's one of the implications there, right? Dating is explicit and pervasive in the media. And this is the last of the four kind of macro trends that I'm pointing out today. Nearly half of teens say that TV is their top source to learn about romance. And that's why I particularly included the Family Guy in there, because if that's the case, we're in big trouble. Magazines and celebrity gossip blogs are also popular. These sources lay out every detail of celebrity relationships. So there, one of the takeaways is that the dichotomy of casual yet intense, again, right? I talked about the acceleration, but yet it's relaxed. There's such a public persona of one's relationship now that it's as if it's glamorizing the celebrity of putting your life online. We've all seen it with reality TV. But then there is this intense desire for privacy and intimacy that is also very real, and it still is another evergreen issue, is that rub between parents and caregivers with their kids about privacy and intimacy. So it's interesting. It's more a matter of, I'll put it out online, I just really want to decide who gets to see it, which that doesn't actually make any sense. So from where young people are learning about relationships. So now I'm going to jump into our four considerations, right, for today. Technology is essential. Talked a lot about that already. Here are some statistics for teens. This is all second nature. Most kids have a cell phone and use it daily, if not hourly or minute by minute. Schools try to prohibit their use in many ways. Kids have it down where they don't even need to look at the phone. They're very comfortable with communicating with online tools, and 70% use social networking sites, 68% use chat or instant messaging. And I can also get you some of the sources for some of this work, too, if you need. Overall, their sense of physical space has changed. So cell phone is actually a physical extension of themselves, and there's no online, and this is really important, right? There's no online or offline. I'll still use it. for those over 30, I guess, you know, it's like, there's no online or offline for these kids. It's just life. And their online persona is a continuation of their offline. And I think more and more of us can also relate to that as well. But online persona and their offline persona are really one. These digital tools continue to shape the way we all communicate. And the unique dynamics of the teens' world makes technology play an even greater role in their intimate relationships. Okay, now we have a quiz, so you guys can just yell them out. What is PAW? Parents are watching. IDK. I don't know, right? BRB. All right. UG2BK. All right, that was quick. Bam. All right, go ahead, DEGT. Oh, don't even go there. Okay. So OMG, we know. TTYL. I learned that one this morning in the youth track. So I was like, what is that one? NSFW. Not safe for work. What did you think it was? 143. And LOL. And now you have to laugh with me, right? Uh-huh. In any of our public awareness and prevention campaigns, one of our first steps is to understand where our audience is and how they might want to be reached. How does our target want to receive information, especially information about relationships? Who do they want to hear it from? Messenger really matters. And through what platforms or channels, right? A key point here is that I know it can be overwhelming to think of all the places teens are and that you want to be, but we have to just be realistic in what we do. There are some basic minimums to achieve, I think, when it comes to a blog. For instance, our Facebook, weekly Facebook updates. From my experience, at least, at the very least, if you're going to do a blog, you're really going to have an active fan page, the benchmark is twice a week. And that's still pretty low. It's kind of at the least. I think four seems about optimal, but also depends on the length. Obviously, again, that's within context. But that's a good barometer. More than that, you could risk irrelevancy or even then bombarding who your users. Being on Facebook and YouTube also opens up the campaign to various comments and content that put users that users on the site want to talk about and feel strongly about. Consistent monitoring is a given, and it can be expensive. But unfortunately, it's also one of those things where in reaching youth, the more and more that time passes, the less and less of it is a choice to use technology in the work that we do to reach them. So to come up with a plan that is realistic from, say, a labor and capacity standpoint on what these updates could look like, and really laying it out, the common pitfall for sure is we need to have a Twitter, we need to have a Facebook, we need to have a YouTube, we need to have a blog. And you always have to ask yourself why, of course, and just don't try to boil the ocean, right? And so that was really kind of where we started with that's not cool. And with that, the whole focus is digital. And so we really had to be intentional about how exactly we were going to use these tools. And that in many ways, too, having a Facebook page, there are also a whole host of applications. David will help me with. There's something that can aggregate all of your social networking now that was, I just got an invitation for it last week. Anyhow, I mean, the point is, to be on Facebook means then you could also hook it up with whatever your Twitter update goes automatically over there and vice versa. So anyway, consolidated and all that other stuff. So it really is, it's just complicated and just, you know, walk before we run, right? So teen authenticity is also really important. And the monitoring piece, I think it's going to be one thing that really we also had to get over and had a lot of conversations about what's our threshold of comfortability, right? Of comfort with what some of these kids are going to say. It's not a matter of when it's getting monitored. It's not a matter of just getting the obscenities off, which obviously we know. But also when you think about, whenever we've posted, or you go on WebMD and you want to find something, you want to find it. You go online because you want to find it there, and you want to find it fast. And you want your question to be answered quickly for sure. And if you are going to post and you have information to share, to have that wait 24 hours really loses the entire experience. And so it really is something to think about around the comfort level and that you might feel uncomfortable, and that's okay, actually, too. Love is Respect does a very good job with reaching teens on how they want to be communicated with, so to speak, talking to kids about how they want to be talked to. You can talk on the phone, you can call into the helpline 24/7, but also, too, they have a chat function that has one-on-one via instant messaging with a trained advocate that you're going to be speaking to, right? But the average call to the teen helpline is 12 minutes, but when you go to the chat, it jumps to over 40 minutes. And that's a really, I mean, you can get the implication from that. And from there, teens often want to be directed to, so I'm calling from Wichita. Teen National Helpline is going to refer me to some of my local resources. Well, let's make sure that those local resources also know, hopefully, have the same tools in place to talk to me in how I was initially brought in, right? Brought into that service and what I need. So it's often difficult to find locally. It is capacity issues, and budget is a major reality. So the helpline encourages teens to use these internet-based resources, but it's when thinking about it like a language, it's as though we'd bring somebody in and offering a service in Spanish and then refer them to an English-only resource. I mean, it's, you know, that's what I kind of liken it to. Consideration number two, understand how evergreen teen dating issues manifest with today's youth. So I've mentioned that word before, and I think we get, like, you know, evergreen, constant, consistent messaging that are manifesting themselves in different ways. The pressures and realities of teen life today are just different. But pressures and realities existed forever, right? Or have existed. So these are some statistics just to ground ourselves in which we know about, that 1 in 3 teenage girls experience abuse from a dating partner, and 1 in 3 teens have heard of a friend or peer experiencing teen dating abuse. And that's another really important piece I'm going to show a spot that really talks about the bystander approach. When we're thinking about the teen authenticity, it's so easy often to go direct to kids who are experiencing or kids who have a problem and making sure that we're there for them. But recognizing who influences youth, who influences teens, the first person they're going to go to is their best friend. We know that, right? So more often than not, actually, what teens are experiencing when it comes to this issue are actually friends talking to them about it. In thinking about some of these evergreen themes and how they manifest themselves, social sensitivity, they worry about scaring away their first boyfriend or girlfriend by setting boundaries or not fitting in. Often alarming behavior, equating control and jealousy with love, right? And that's something that we've also seen for a really long time. In our focus group research, we heard from teens that instances of physical abuse are wrong, and that hitting, kicking, slapping, et cetera, are not okay in a relationship. But when we asked them about non-physical forms of abuse, they wavered on what was okay and what was not okay, a more emotional and verbal abuse. And this also includes digital abuse that we kind of touched on. It's been very visible in the media over the past year, abuse or stalking over cell phones or online. And it's just digital abuse particularly is really just another channel for controlling, pressuring, and threatening behavior to be expressed. And with that, I'm going.
My girlfriend texts me every 10 seconds asking me where I am.
My boyfriend keeps pressuring me to send him nude pics. Sometimes this guy I'm seeing spies on my social network pages.
What should I do?
I'm not sure if it's because she likes me.
Or because he thinks he can control me. I feel pressured.
Uncomfortable.
Confused.
And downright disrespected.
That's not cool. .com.
So that's not cool. That's specifically the campaign that I work on with at the Family Violence Prevention Fund, and it focuses on these three digital infractions, as we call them, right? Unwanted or repeated calls and text messages. And the interesting thing is here is you'll hear oftentimes people talk about repeated and excessive. And a lot of the data that comes out talks about 1 in 3 teens said a partner had text messaged them up to 30 times an hour to check on what they were doing, where they are, and who they're with. And the important for me, right, the important piece of that statistic is the second half, though. So 30 might seem outrageous to us, but some youth, and it depends on what they say, right? Because we know that one text message can be controlling and alarming and concerning and damaging. And so that's what's it's all a matter of sometimes how these questions are asked and making sure that we're looking and gauging the right thing. But that's just, it's outrageous. breaking into social networking accounts, we found two where, it'd be asked, well, how exactly is this person on your account? I mean, what happened? Oh, well, I gave him my password. So again, it's some of this, it's the casual nature of it, but then when things go wrong and it's the intensity of, I really trusted you. And that dichotomy is something that we just see over and over when it comes to youth. And that's why our approach is one of support and not necessarily, though, one of fear and threat of what the consequences are going to be. Pressure to share embarrassing or private pictures is also something, sexting, that we all know and have seen, that's in the media quite a bit this last year. But overall, we can see these issues are prevalent, but still some forms of dating abuse are not top of mind. So teens may acknowledge forms of texting abuse, but they don't regularly discuss it and often joke about over-texting or, oh, stalking, I'm being stalked online, somebody's blowing up my phone. But some of the work we do, too, on That's Not Cool, uses, this is maybe the discomfort, it uses some of that stalker language, right, not to dismiss it, but to bring kids in, the language that they're using, but then to follow up with them and to explore how they really feel about it. Because is it just annoying, or do you feel uncomfortable, do you feel disrespected, or do you feel scared? this kind of gets at what that first clip I showed with when we talked about the invisible wall, the anonymity sometimes of digital communications. We need to help kids connect the dots. Digital abuse is happening, but our target doesn't call it that. It hasn't really been put on the radar so much, and that's happening daily now. I think most kids actually would probably get it and understand it. But what happens is, again, it's the disconnect between it happening and not necessarily being important, and we see this all the time when we think about media violence. It's becoming desensitized. It's becoming a desensitized situation, particularly for a lot of youth, that we saw, you know, we have on a grid, okay, it goes, happens often, not so often, not that important, very important, right? And even things that are very, very serious, they'd say, but don't necessarily happen that often, kind of pretty much still stay in that serious category. There were some things that they were putting into the not so serious category that happen all the time that I think you and I would think are pretty serious, and that's where they're netting out because it happens so much. It's important to note that when some teens think there's a problem too, they might be reluctant to talk to an adult. They might be, particularly their parents. They're afraid because their parents are uncomfortable or unfamiliar with the technology, they risk getting the phone taken away from them, that same phone that might have been given to them by that parent to keep them safe. It's an interesting dynamic there. To end this consideration, I'm going to show one more video from MTV's A Thin Line campaign, which is the Thin Line campaign ventures beyond, it focuses only on digital, but it also goes beyond dating relationships and talks about cyberbullying as well. If you recall, so the second consideration was around how are evergreen issues manifesting themselves, and this is a perfect example. Wanting to impress somebody who you like or into is nothing new, but impressing them through sexting is definitely a pretty new phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a lot of younger girls trying to fit in and impress like an older guy that they have to send like pictures of themselves like that.
What is it turning into that you can't go out on a date anymore? You have to flirt via...
I think a girl in high school sent a video of herself doing things to herself in order to get a guy to date her, he sent it to every guy in his grade.
And guys will do that.
There's a thin line between him and the whole school.
Consideration number three, empowerment and guidance, not fear and threat. And I got that. I mentioned that a little bit before. It's the tone we try to strike when we're working with teens. And unfortunately, fear and threat in our experience doesn't typically foster sustained belief or sustained change. Boss of Me, the campaign that is funded by the Blue Shield of California Foundation and led by Youth Radio, does a really good job of that, of this. Similar to That's Not Cool, actually, Boss of Me uses online and mobile tools to engage their teens. There's clearly a youth-driven feel to the campaign right away, and you see real teens reporting on real stories. It also has service to provide teens with advice via phone, text, or email. Again, kind of showing how a lot of these considerations, practices, definitely overlap. I would go to the website, but it's bom411.com if you're interested. I really love this, and I don't know how many people are familiar with this exercise that came out of the Boston Department of Public Health back in December. If you are, can you raise your hand? So a few of you. It's a great example of empowerment, right? Helping teens identify for themselves the aspects of an unhealthy or healthy relationship. It's important to note, so if you see here, it's about nutritional impact, obviously taking off of suggested servings, right, the nutritional labels. And at the top there, it has unhealthy relationship ingredients. Unhealthy relationship ingredients at the top, drama, disrespect, manipulation, and it defines them down in the fine print. And then healthy relationship ingredients. So at the top, you pick the artist, you pick the song, and you kind of, pretty self-explanatory, you kind of go through there. So I think it's a really good example, thinking about the tone for teens, because it doesn't talk in absolutes. It really shows, when we think about servings, it's like, well, I can eat those French fries if I had a salad for lunch, but it's all a matter of balance, right? The final consideration is authenticity is vital. This goes into some of the tonality pieces that we were talking about, why we're using technology as well, and how some of these evergreen issues are manifesting themselves to be real and to be authentic. So That's Not Cool involved teens in creation from the very beginning. There's a picture of one of our creative folk workshops. It wasn't a focus group. It was an actual workshop that we held for most of the day, and the actual title of the campaign and the logo were born. We heard over and over in talking about this issue, as you won't be surprised, that kids were just saying, that's not cool. We didn't go in being like, that's what we're going to call it. And so we just kept hearing it. And we said, wow, within it simply, and then we were like, wow, the URL is available, but that was a whole other, coup, right? And so to be able to brand something like that around our issue is seen as something that's a great opportunity right now. I'm going to show it.
Yeah, hey, it's me, Nick. This is like the fourth message that I left you. Why don't you pick up your phone? This is pissing me off. I know you see my number on your caller ID. Nobody treats me like this, especially you. Number one, I told you not to go out. Number two, why haven't you called me back? This is not cool. You do not want to get me mad. Don't make me get ugly, all right? It's been all day since I've talked to you. What's wrong with you? Are you seriously stupid or something? Call me back. I can't believe the way she's treating me, man.
The way she treats you.
Speak up. Just because it isn't physical doesn't mean it's not abuse.
That's actually from a campaign, See It and Stop It, that many of you probably know. And although they're not producing new work, it was launched about 6 years ago, but I thought also it was another example bringing in the bystander piece and, again, really being authentic to what the guys were doing, sitting on the couch, probably in a rec room or something like that in the basement. Complement public education campaigns with offline events. And about creating this ecosystem, although I've focused so heavily on digital, we also know that there are just a ton of areas and issues and locations in which we can reach out to kids and also talk to them about their lives. In thinking about showing TSA campaigns as well, it's really easy to also show just TV. Overall, stepping back, trying to abridge this here and thinking about offline activities that also are complemented with online activities, it's important to note that it's also then not just TV. TV can be very expensive, but also identifying that there's radio here as well, events, whether it be at a county fair, whether you're holding a school play or school skits, acting those out, whether or not it's a poetry jam. We've also worked with our Start Strong sites to localize That's Not Cool particularly. 8 of the 11 Start Strong communities, and some of you are probably familiar with what Start Strong is, have done a really great job in integrating in and adapting That's Not Cool into their social marketing and broader activities, but also then how, whenever, say, Oakland actually held a poetry slam, and a lot of the poetry was about the issues of relationships and dating and abuse, and video of that and the scripts of that can then be put up on your Facebook page, can then be put up online to create that content. And then as folks comment on that and say, oh, I have more to give to that, or I'm going to write my own poem, then now you have new work that can then also be acted out again on the ground. And it really creates this nice synergy. One of the examples was That's Not Cool. We were at the Vans Warped Tour last year. It was our digital space, if you will. And it was a custom-designed interactive booth that was branded with That's Not Cool designs and messaging. Kids played 2 interactive games there. Text Invaders and Nudie Calls, they were played. And in fact, those games are going to soon be online, as well as then how they were also played in the booth themselves. There's a kid playing Text Invaders. The woman on the left was part of our That's Not Cool team. And an interesting consideration, too, is thinking about when the messenger matters and these on-the-ground activities, it might not be us who's like really there kind of being the ones to engage the youth directly. We found kind of the near peers, and we hired a young team, we were about 19 to 23, where they were just old enough to be responsible with everything that was going on, and just young enough, certainly, to still be relevant. I love this. Walkie-stalkie is a human cell phone who needs to learn the meaning of privacy and personal space. Kids loved it. At a certain point, crew members wore the suit and ventured out, passing out flyers and posing for pictures and letting teens know about the digital space and encouraging them to sign up for our Facebook page and our Twitter. To date, we have about almost 50,000 Facebook fans, so we're really excited about that. In thinking about one of the advantages of an online platform such as Facebook and thinking about bringing folks and teens into the fold for that, too, is you have essentially a free focus group right there. So with that many fans, I mean, you have 500 fans or you have 1,000 fans. It's not just the number of fans, but it's also the depth of engagement. It's wide and deep. And so if you have any number of fans there, they could really serve as kind of a little bit of a brain trust on something that you might just be thinking about. Or how are they using Twitter and how are they using some of these other platforms? I will just end and close and say, from That's Not Cool plug is, you know, we really invite all of you to use the materials and bring them back into your community, take some of the considerations, and hopefully they were helpful, and that all of the campaign elements are actually housed on a tools website. You sign in, you can go back and forth. There's research and background there. There's tips on how to solicit donated media from local media outlets. And of course, all of the actual material, art, TV spots, radio spots are online as well.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.